Across America and around the world, once again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, and tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have as a very special guest a man who has investigated just about every possible aspect of the paranormal, the occult, all of the mysteries of the world, and has written an awful, awful lot of books on all of these subjects. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss one single moment of tonight's episode of the Hour of the Time.
Ah, thank you. I've been standing there for centuries.
Yes, I suppose it seems why it's just raining, but you're not wet.
No, I'm not, am I?
Where are you coming from?
I was watching a wonderfully terrifying double feature movie. I was a teenage Frankenstein in Blood of Dracula.
Oh?
Professor Frankenstein created a teenage monster to bring havoc and terror to all who meet him. But he left a few parts out, particularly in the poor lad's face.
May we change
the vampire in Blood of Dracula, quite unfriendly except when hungry, than any friend will do for a few ghastly moments.
Please,
I must leave you.
But there's nothing here but an old cemetery.
Yes, I know. I want to meet some old friends here. After you see I Was a Teenage Frankenstein and Blood of Dracula, you might drop back here. We'll discuss the pictures at some length.
Yes, I'll do that.
Well, that's a fitting opening for the discussion of tonight's subjects and also tonight's guest. But before I introduce our guest, I want to tell you that you won't be able to call in tonight because we only have one call-in line, and our guest is on that line. Number two, WWCR, called me just before we went on the air and said they have three-phase power going to the transmitter, and they have lost one of the phases to this transmitter, and they're working feverishly trying to get WWCR back up on the air. So don't panic. The electricians are doing their job, and hopefully you'll get to hear at least a portion of this program on shortwave, those of you who can't hear me telling you this because you do listen to shortwave and it's off the air. Brad Steiger, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here with you.
Well, it's been quite a while since we've had a chance to talk. What are you doing with yourself nowadays?
Well, more of the same. Been doing a lot of lecturing, traveling, working on some books, and just kind kind of staying in the swing of things here. A lot of exciting things happening, and as you know, it's pretty hard to keep track of all of them the way things are multiplying here.
That's true. I hear you're working on a new book.
Yeah, working on one that I know you will be especially interested in. Of course, it quotes you in a number of places, so that ought to pique your interest. It's called, Bill, Our Captive Planet.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
And it explores the whole aspect of the UFO from several perspectives. Are we talking about aliens? Are we talking about a secret society? Are we talking about aliens and a secret shadow government? Are we talking about all three? Or maybe more, exploring it and just what is going on in terms of the various theories and so forth that we hear, and how which ones probably have more validity than others, or presenting them so the reader can make up his or her own mind.
Well, I'm sure glad that you're doing it in that kind of a format with that approach, because so many people don't look at objectively, especially when they're writing about the UFO phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
It's either the benevolent space brothers are here to save us from ourselves, or they're here to eat us, therefore we must all band together in one world government to protect ourselves from them, are some version of those two, and rarely do you find anybody willing to look at the other.
Well, as you and I have talked, Bill, there's so many aspects to this phenomenon.
There are.
And as I've heard you say, you'll make a very strong statement in your lectures, and then you'll say, of course, if you can prove me wrong, do it. Or I may be wrong. So again, to me, that's always been the approach of the journalist. This is what makes sense to me, but it might not make complete sense to you. And we can still be friends if it doesn't. But, you know, let's at least think. Let's at least explore and see what's going on. Because something is certainly going on.
That's right. And we can't afford to ignore it, because it could be one of the greatest manipulations of all time. And, of course, if extraterrestrials are real and they're visiting this Earth, it certainly would turn out to be the most significant event in the history of the human race. Now, you've investigated, as I said right before the music there, you've investigated just about everything there is to do with the paranormal.
Well, I think so. I'm intrigued by all of it. And, of course, it's very interesting to me. You know, some people think of me strictly as a ufologist. Some people think of me as working strictly with Native American shamans. Other people think of me as working with astral projection or with past lives. And in truth, I've been intrigued by all aspects of the paranormal. And again, trying to take the journalist now. Again, I can't say at this point, you know, I'm totally unbiased, because I think an unbiased book gets kind of lumpy and vanilla pudding-ish too, you know. But at least presenting a point of view, but not in a dogmatic way. So that's the approach in all the things, whether it's exploring haunted houses or UFOs.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I agree with you. There is no such thing as an unbiased book or an unbiased viewpoint. Anybody who says they're totally unbiased, as far as I'm concerned, is not telling me the truth.
Well, I get annoyed when people say that, even when scientists say that. Because, you know, if you undertake a scientific formula or a scientific experiment, you must have some goal in mind. You can't just be mixing things together haphazardly. So I think anyone who follows any type of intellectual pursuit has some goal or some aspect or some thesis that he would like to demonstrate, at least.
Sure. What do you think the most interesting phenomenon or event or occurrence or freak of nature or whatever that you've ever investigated? What was the most interesting and intriguing to you?
Well, I'm not good at questions like that, because, as I said, Bill, all of this is so intriguing to me. I suppose, and I speak for my wife, Sherry, here, too, I think one aspect that, to us, ties it all together is probably the UFO phenomena tied together with the question of who we really are, what truly are our origins. And I think these are things that we really have to get in place before, and I'm not at all now. Sometimes I say this, people think I'm knocking the space program. I'm not. But what I'm saying is, before we go tracing out into space and quote-unquote conquering new worlds, I think we really need to know who we are, what our true identity is, and what our responsibility is to the universe.
Well, I think we're tampering with an awful lot of things that we don't have any business tampering with, specifically since we don't have any way of controlling the use of a lot of these things, such as this getting into genetic tampering with the creation of new life forms and tampering with...
Well, that's really dangerous when we get into that.
Boy, isn't it? Especially since the history of the world shows that there have been men and groups of men who band together to create the perfect super race. I mean, what does that mean in the light of the ability to literally do that?
Well, what that means is someone is deciding who the superman is, and that's... I think you and I are really nifty guys, Bill, but maybe someone won't think we fit that categorization, and we're out. We don't get to be included.
That's right.
And I think we should all have a vote, you know, in this society, and I think we all need to have a voice in deciding what avenues and positions our governments take, because I don't know, I guess I'm kind of old-fashioned that way, but it does say government by the people, and we is the people.
That's correct. And the whole purpose of the Hour of the Time, and I don't think that you've heard the show before, but the whole purpose of the Hour of the Time is to wake the sheeple, the people that are really asleep out there and don't understand that there's things in the world happening that they need to pay attention to, and that what they perceive the world as being is really not the way it really is, and try to empower them once they've awakened and try to save the penultimate achievement of all mankind, which is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the only document ever penned by the hand and mind of man that ever set man free. And I think that is so important. And at the same time, I admonish my audience not to believe what I say or what you say or President Clinton says or Dan Rather or Tom Valentine or Ted Koppel or even their own mother.
Right.
But learn to investigate and research and think for themselves so that they can be their own leaders. That's what real empowerment is.
Yes. Well, I think that's a noble goal, Bill, and I certainly can... can speak up and cast my vote that when it comes to waking up people, no one does it better than you.
Well, thank you. You've done a little bit yourself. You know, you don't agree with everything I say or do. And in fact, a lot of people out there don't agree with everything I say or do. And I certainly don't agree with everything that you say or do. But one thing that makes you and I unique, and maybe James Mosley and a few other people that I can name, is that we can sit down, and even with our differences, we can have an intelligent discussion.
Exactly.
And not get angry with each other.
I've never been able to handle that. Bill, I don't play cards. There are very few games that I indulge in at all, because as a small boy, when I would see people pick up and lose it over Monopoly set or whatever, I think, you know, I've never been able to understand it. With my own children, I said from the beginning, I will never argue, but we will discuss things. And I say that to people today. I'll discuss things till my tongue can no longer quiver in my jaws, but I'm not going to argue with you. When you argue, that simply entrenches each other's position all the firmer, and nothing happens. But with discussion, oh, I love discussion. And as you say, Bill, we might not agree on everything, but we've had some dandy discussions till the wee hours.
I wish everyone could do that, because to me, a conversation or a dialogue is an exchange of ideas.
Exactly.
And only insecure people have to win
right.
The dialogue. And they don't come away learning anything from it.
Well, what we're doing is expressing our opinions.
Right.
I have definite opinions, but they change, and I really want to hold that right. I began in UFO research. First of all, I came from the area of psychical research, basically exploring the mind. And my first take on UFOs was that it was kind of a nutty subject that some people got carried away with, and there probably wasn't a whole lot of truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I began to explore it really openly with my first book, Strangers in the Skies. And again, the timing was perfect there. That came out the very week that Dr. J. Allen Hynek said the Michigan sightings were swamp gas. So everything was in the news. And that book sold, it got on the bestseller list like within 3 weeks and sold out. So I thought, well, I guess, you know, I was right there. People do take this subject very seriously. So from that time on, from 1966 on, I have made a very serious study of the UFO phenomena. At that time, the prevailing attitude was nuts and bolts. They were machines from outer space. They may not have anybody inside them, but they were clanky machines from outer space. They were space probes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I examined the evidence at that time, it seemed like we're dealing with a paraphysical phenomena. Or it occurred to me, because I, like yourself, I had always been intrigued by the secret societies, the occult societies, the societies of which Hitler and other people were a member. And I thought, again, as I know you put out, Bill, that this could be a hoax by some terrestrially based society that has great power, has great strength. And I was fascinated, and I bet you were too, when the James Bond series came out. And
oh, yes.
Fleming wrote it about Schmersh, this incredible secret kind of society. That did its own thing, had its own rules, had its own armies, had its own power, had its own money, and basically could do anything. You remember there, they capture astronauts, they capture our submarines. Now this is Schmersh, it's a terrestrial organization.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I thought that might be Ian Fleming's way of telling us things about what is really going on. So that certainly was on the aspect, and then I think there's still the mental aspect, the psychic aspect, the psychological aspect, and even the spiritual aspect of UFOs. I think the whole phenomena tells us a lot about who we really are as a people, as a species, if you will.
Well, I've certainly found that there's a definite connection between UFOs and what contactees are told, and even the names of some of these supposed aliens who contact people, and the ancient gods of the mysteries.
That's right.
and since the mysteries are still practiced today in secret,
absolutely.
This intrigues me even more.
Oh, very much so. That's right. I remember we did have a discussion about that late one night in Hawaii, I think.
Yeah, probably.
About we had both kind of stumbled on that, about the ancient gods that seem to be popping up again in the contactee reports. Even though these people, I don't doubt for one minute when they tell me in all sincerity, if I make an allusion, they don't know what I'm talking about. And I believe them, because I don't think that many people are familiar with the mystery schools in our society.
That's true. Well, you'll find that the listeners to this program are, because I've done approximately 28 hours on just the mystery schools, starting from the dawn of man right up to the present day. So they know what we're talking about.
They know what we're talking about. Well, I think I'm still correct in my assessment of the general population.
Oh, yes, without any doubt. What is your assessment of the government's role in this? When they say that they don't know anything about UFOs or extraterrestrials, do you think they're telling the truth?
Well, again, I'm going to fall back on something I've said many times. The government isn't just one person.
No.
I've been asked since the beginning, well, what does the Air Force say about this? And as a little boy, I was asked, well, what does the minister say about this? It seems like too many people are so easily led to relegate their thinking to somebody else. And they also seem to anthropomorphize a group into one person, as if the Air Force, you know, is one bird colonel, and that's all we're dealing with, as if the government is one tax collector, and that's all we're dealing with. We're dealing with many, many people. So what I have found in my research in the last 30 years is that within the government, within the Air Force, within the military, I've had some of my greatest allies.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my greatest allies, for example, were fighter pilots in Korea, who there they were in those spiffy new jets. They were sweeping over the Yalu River. They were God's gift to women and apple pie, and there they were flying this machine on the cutting edge of technology. And all of a sudden, zoom, here comes this object that just makes them look like they're still on their tricycles.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have had a vendetta. Some pilots have had a vendetta against the UFO for making them look like monkeys ever since then. Again, within the military, within the law enforcement agencies, I've had I can say that I've had members of the different law enforcement agencies save my life on certain occasions. But then I know there are others who probably regard me as somewhere, south of insane, or as a rabble-rouser, or as a troublemaker, or as a kook. So again, people's opinions, I guess when you reach a certain age, I'm at the point now where I'm simply doing the work, simply putting the ideas out, and not I don't have that youthful compulsion anymore that everyone agrees with me or that I win every argument, as we were discussing earlier. So certainly I think there are aspects of the government that have been covering it up. I think there are aspects of the government who have been doing their darndest to expose this, who are just as confused, who are just as baffled, and who are just as eager to solve this mystery as you and I are, Bill.
Well, you may be right. My experience tells me that those who talk to the public are probably telling the truth when they say they don't know anything.
Yeah.
And the government doesn't know anything because that's what they've been told.
Uh-huh.
And they don't have access to anything because they're usually public relations officers.
Exactly.
And they say what they're told to say.
Exactly.
And when they say it, they believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come off as being believable.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get behind the scenes, as you discuss and talk to pilots and people who are involved in these things, you begin to see a different story and a different pattern begins to emerge.
I guess I think so often, and I don't want to get into politics because I'm basically apolitical. I'm an independent. I don't vote a party. I try to look at the person. But I admired Adlai Stevenson as a human being, so I'm not going to talk about the fact he was a Democrat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I still remember this dignified gentleman when he sat in UN and denied with all of his heart and spirit that Gary Powers and the U2 was taking place, that we could not do that. His government would not spy in that way. And then when the facts were irrevocable, when he had to admit that we did indeed have U2 planes going over Russia and that Francis Gary Powers was indeed in the employ of our government. And I will always think again of the sincere government worker who, just as you said, Bill, is doing what he's told, sincerely believes it, because that's the way he was reared, that's the way he was brought up, that's what his parents told him, that's what his grandparents told him, that's what the movies have told him, and he believes it. So the age we're going through now of cynicism and disbelief and skepticism is healthy in one way, but again, I think a balance is going to come there too, and I think that more of the officials in the government, and again, I'm going to sound like a cockeyed optimist, but I think a lot of the material that you're talking about, other people are talking about, is going to start touching the consciences of some of those people. And I know I've been in audiences where not everybody there likes you, Bill. And that some of the people, I think, have probably come with the attitude of maybe even, getting some dirt on you or whatever. I think some of those people, and here goes the cockeyed optimist again, I think you're going to start touching the consciences of some of those people, and I think we're going to start seeing a change.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. I know that when I first began and believed wholeheartedly that what I had seen when I was attached to the Naval Intelligence could only be the truth, and was talking about extraterrestrials, and that I had seen documents that said that they were real, thousands and thousands of people flocked to me, and it was incredible. When I began to connect that with the New World Order, then I came under attack like you never would believe in your entire life. As long as I stuck to the extraterrestrials are here, everything was fine. When I began to connect extraterrestrials with New World Order, things got very, very nasty. And then when I began to see traces of a plan all the way back to 1917 and before, and could connect that with the running of the War of the Worlds by the Mercury Theater and Orson Welles in 1936 as a test of this hypothesis, and began to think that maybe extraterrestrials aren't here, maybe this is some kind of a manipulation to create a one-world government, then things got so nasty that we found ourselves in a ditch with nothing. Now people are beginning to look at that as well as everything else. Now, there's always been people out there who refuse to believe that extraterrestrials were real, but those same people refuse to believe that it could also be used as a manipulation to create a one-world government.
Boy, you got me a little nervous, Bill. The last chapter in our new book that we're working on is UFOs and the New World Order.
Isn't it funny how research converges?
Well, of course, you certainly will be quoted in that chapter, so the discussions we've had, which we've taped with your permission.
Well, don't get me wrong. I don't know if extraterrestrials are real or not.
Well,
I've come to believe that there is a power in this world who are using extraterrestrials, whether they are real or not, to create an artificial enemy from outer space, whether they're an enemy or not, whether they're even real or not, to create a downfall of national boundaries and a formation of a one-world government to protect us so that we can all come together to protect ourselves from this threat from outer space.
Well, I think so often, and I think you're familiar with the quote, Bill, and I have it on, you know, down, and I'm using it in the book. When Reagan was talking to UN and talking to Gorbachev.
Oh, yes, I know, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah, but the audience may not. Go ahead.
Okay. When he said, wouldn't it be nice? And we can just hear the great communicator saying this, you know, well, wouldn't it be nice if we had a threat from outer space and then all of the countries would bound together because we had a common enemy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great? And wouldn't it? Well, maybe if even if it didn't happen, wouldn't it be great if we could make people think it was happening? Now, that's Reagan's quote.
Yes.
And again, you know, the guy, bless his heart, and again, I'm not being political, folks, when I say this, but I think the man was genuinely had a good heart. I'm not going to brag about maybe above his heart. And I think that maybe he slipped and said a lot of things that he wasn't really supposed to say. And I've often felt if that wasn't one of those areas where maybe he slipped and said something that had been presented to him, but he wasn't supposed to bring it out that way.
That could be. But words like that from a president are bound to instill the subconscious idea in people's minds that there is a threat from space, whether there is or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And remember that Hitler brought the German people together by making the Jews a common enemy. And in the Cold War, brought this country together and the free world together to face the evil empire, which was the Soviet Union.
Right.
Throughout history, to bring people together in a common goal, to realize a common goal, the thing that human beings have used more often than anything else is creating an enemy, whether there ever was one or not.
And that's the saddest, I think one of the saddest aspects of human history. There always has to be the other.
Yes.
There always has to be the other. The other that we can make weird, that we can make less than human, that we can annihilate without conscience. Whether it's the westward expansion and it's the Native American, whether it's because we need cheap labor and it's the Afro-American slave, that ability we have in the most noble and spiritual, and this can be preached from the pulpit of mainstream churches, of making and creating the other, the enemy.
Do you think that there's something in humanity as a whole that says that unless there's somebody lower than us, we're nothing?
I think, and here again, as a former teacher, I'm going to say that. I get sick to my stomach when I see the state of American education right now. I mean, I get literally ill when I think of it. But to me, education is still one of the great salvations. And I know you believe in that as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Educating the people and taking again, and I'm not trying to parrot you, Bill, because I really believe this, but taking our power back as a people and giving us the basic education. I think what you have just said, again, is the earmark of the person, bless their hearts, who feel inferior, who know that they do not have an adequate education, who fear that their very common labor jobs are going to be taken away from them. They desperately need to feel, for some reason, until we can make everyone feel that they have a sovereign entity within them, that they have a right and a purpose and a goal, until we can kind of go back to the tribal structure of living where everyone in the tribe has value, where everyone is important, where everyone is significant, until we can get those kind of basic ethics back in our culture, then we're going to have prejudice and bigotry and hatred.
Sure. Well, we've got to take a break right now. Why don't you just hang on? And,
okay.
Maybe you'll be interested in what I'm going to say, too.
I bet I will.
And for my steady listeners out there, you're going to hear once again, folks, We are in an extremely unstable period as far as the economy of the world, the economy of this nation, your own economy in your family is not too rock steady. We all know that. We are facing great change in the world, whether we want it or not, it is coming. Now we can have a great say in what that change is going to be if we wake up and if we use our own individual personal power and come together and direct it in a way that will ensure a good future for all of us. But this change, and especially built upon the foundation of the monetary system that we're using today, signals hard times ahead for our economy. And I've predicted for many years now a complete and total collapse of the economic system as we know it today. Now, if our march on Washington on September the 29th, if we all meet in Washington as a part of Project 93, on the Capitol steps at 9 a.m., and if we are there in their next term in office, then we may be able to change this, and we may not have to go through the hardships that have been predicted, not just by me, but by many other people. If you haven't read Debt Virus by Dr. Jacques Arand, if you haven't read Harry Figge's book, if you haven't read my book, Behold a Pale Horse, you need to. All of these books are pointing toward an economic catastrophe. To protect yourself, you need to put your assets into something that is proven throughout history to be able to protect those assets. And folks, if you look at history, you know that there is only one place to put money in times like these, and that's in hard assets. You don't put your money in hard assets in times like these to try to make a profit. You put it there to protect those assets so that you will not lose the value. Paper assets in times like these turn out to be disasters. Call Swiss America Trading right now, 1-800-289-2646. Ask for the free newsletter. Tell them that you listen to the Hour of the Time. And while you're at it, thank them for sponsoring this program. For without them, this program would not be here for you at this very moment. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. By protecting your future, folks, you're also protecting the future of this program, The Hour of the Time, and, of course, freedom for the world.
Fear will freeze you when you face it.
The mummy.
Born from the darkest tomb of the pharaohs, it rises from the quiet dust of centuries to wreak a strange vengeance against mankind.
The mummy.
It tears steel bars like paper. It snaps men's spines like matchsticks. Walks through bullets like a ghost.
The mummy.
It sees without eyes. It lives without breath. Yet its desires are strangely, madly human.
The motion picture screen's most shocking experience in suspense. In chilling Technicolor.
The mummy.
I just moved in my new house today. Moving was rough, but I got the way. My chain started ringing and bells ringing loud. I knew I'd moved in a haunted house. Still I made up in my mind to stay. And nothing was gonna drive me away. When I saw something that killed me grief. To be free. I stopped right still and I did to freeze. It did stroll right up to me. Made noise with feet that sound like a drum.
Say that you're gonna be here when morning comes.
I say you have to be here when the morning comes. I won't stay right here, I ain't gonna run. I own this house now, I am boss. Ain't no bombs gonna run me off. In the kitchen, my cook stove's blazing hot. Coffee was boiling in the pot. My queen's head melted in my face.
Well, folks, we're back with a vengeance, and our special guest tonight is Mr. Brad Steiger, who's written, gosh, I don't know, Brad, how many books have you written?
I think about 128.
128. That makes you an extremely prolific author.
I guess that would be the designation.
What are some of the subjects that you've covered? What are some of the names of your books?
Mysteries of Time and Space is one that a lot of people have read.
I'm having a little level problems with you, Brad. I need you to make sure your phone's right in front of your mouth. That's much better.
Okay. Mysteries of Time and Space, Medicine Power, Strangers from the Skies. Are we still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
Oh, okay. There was some strange noise coming up.
There's always strange noise on my phones.
Yeah.
There were a lot of strange noise on my phones all day long. We're receiving an awful lot of threats by telephone. We have a recorder now on the phone. We've notified the county sheriff, the police department, and the telephone company. And it has to do with an expose show that I ran not too many days ago. Also, our sponsor is receiving ultimatums, and all kinds of things are happening. So we're taking the normal precautions around here. Also, I need to tell the listening audience that WWCR is back on the air during that little musical selection. We turned on the shortwave radio, and WWCR is strong. For those of you who don't know what happened, they had one of the phases of the three-phase power that goes to the generator for 7435, and they were working feverishly to repair it, and they are now back on the air. Well, let's get back to some of the subjects you've written about, Brad.
Yeah, okay. I've written, as I say, Mysteries of Time and Space has been a very popular book, Worlds Before Our Own, Gods of Aquarius, UFOs and the Transformation of Humankind. That's all one title. Very popular book. Everything from German to Japanese, German to Japanese, that's been published. Project Blue Book, I edited the Air Force Files, Project Blue Book of UFOs. As I say, the books on the Native American medicine, the shamans. Sherry and I recently wrote Hollywood and the Supernatural, which deals with the supernatural phenomena that many movie stars have experienced.
Are you talking about George?
We had a Literary Guild selection last year, which we're pleased of. That's like getting an Academy Award nomination when you're a writer.
What was
that? Our book on pets, Strange Powers of Pets.
That sounds interesting.
And
Did you see Stephen King's Pet Cemetery, by the way?
Well, that kind of upset my stomach.
That kind of upset a lot of people's stomach. Sure upset.
And then I have written a number of novels. And I've written a lot of mystery stories all the way back with Alfred Hitchcock and The Saint and so forth. And then my book on Rudolph Valentino was made into a movie by Ken Russell, the British producer.
Uh-huh.
And on and on. And as we're talking with the paranormal, I've done a lot of ghost busting in the earlier days, going into haunted houses, working with that.
Did you ever find evidence or really believe that any of the ghosts you investigated were real?
Yeah. I went in purely intellectual, almost smugly, disgustingly intellectual, Bill, thinking that everything could be explained by a squirrel in the attic or a squirrel in someone's upstairs attic. Found, again, to my, I guess, we all need to be humbled every now and then, and running up against phenomena. I had a buddy, ex-Green Beret Special Forces, a guy who's been a friend of mine for years, who would always go with me, in case, you know, sometimes people do nasty things when they set you up, so he was always along. Usually had a couple friends who were police officers, and then there would be journalists and so forth. So we had a pretty good team, and we had a lot of electronic material and so forth. There was this one place in Lincoln, Nebraska, where a series of violent murders had taken place in the house over the years. And we were called there. Very, very often the people who would call us there, believe it or not, Bill, would be police officers who were called out, you know, and again, they thought the same thing, you know, ha ha, ghost. And then when they would find something that they could not explain or they saw, that's when they'd call us. So I thought that was a very solid lead.
Well, police officers are usually pretty hardened, and they're not surprised by anything. I'm That's very interesting.
I found it very interesting. And it's the same way with UFOs. Again, my best leads have come from the police officers who drive the traffic airplanes and helicopters mm-hmm. and so forth who have encountered things. So I must say that I've had an excellent relationship with law enforcement officers all over the United States and enjoy that very much. At any rate, in this particular basement, to make a long story short, they had things like, you know, they'd turn on the faucet in the basement and what would appear to be blood would come out, and they'd seen the manifestations. It's just a wide variety of things. Well, anyway, we were back in this one room, and I could see, one of my associates called it to my attention. While I was in this back room where one of the murders had taken place, the door kept trying to close. Now, the door had to go uphill. It was an old basement that had probably been dirt floor and they just covered it with a cement. You've seen those.
Sure.
So it would hit, Bill, normally it would hit a ridge, a rise in the cement floor, but it would push itself over that. So, I mean, there was definitely a force trying to shut this door on me. So to hold it, both my friends were over 200 pounds, and they held the door. And then after we left, after I'd finished my examination, I said, okay, the crazy door wants to be closed. Shut the damn thing and lock it, which is what they did. We went upstairs, and we had not been upstairs very long, but all of a sudden there was this tremendous crash, and we knew it was that door being smashed open.
Uh-huh.
And then we heard footsteps like King Kong coming up from the basement stairs, and every one of us in the room, and all of us guys were over 200 pounds, got literally lifted and thrown up in the air. Now, that tends to get your attention.
Well, it would certainly get mine really quick.
Yeah, when some invisible energy, you know, that but yet seems to have an intelligence. First kind of playful, but then I ticked it off. You know, I got mad, so I thought, okay, buddy, you want to play. Well, that kind of thing I encountered in a number of houses where there was a force, there was an energy, which seemed to be intelligent. And, you know, so I had to revise a lot of my worldview. I had to revise a lot of my philosophy. I still don't know, and I'm not dogmatic about what that is, but it's what we call ghosts or what we call spirits, you know, throughout the centuries.
Now, a lot of people would say that's demonic or a demon. What do you think about that?
Well, I would have laughed my head off at that a few years ago, too, but I might not have the standard orthodox definition of what that word means, but I have also come to accept that there can be negative pockets, or let me rephrase that, pockets of negative energy that really seem to want to do you bad.
And this is based upon personal experience?
Oh, yes, yes.
What do you think about the concept of angelic beings or good beings that watch over people?
I have to say, whatever that is, whatever you want to call it, guide, guardian, I have had my life saved. I've had a contact that way. I've been cured of a strange disease by following whatever you want to call it, angelic guidance, spirit guide, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've by personal experience, Bill, whatever it is, and again, I was so damned intellectual, and I was so so proud of my IQ and proud of my brain, and now I've come to accept that we have to have an attitude of openness toward things.
Well, you're describing my experience exactly. You know, I started out when I was 16. I knew everything.
Yeah, and that's kind of a neat feeling.
Yeah, and I've grown to the point now where I know nothing. Yeah. I've got a lot of clues, but I really don't know anything. And I'm searching for the answers just as hard and fast as furious as I can search.
Yeah.
And I have found some of the answers.
Mm-hmm. But I feel I've found some answers.
But every time I find an answer, every single time I find an answer, I find 5,000 more questions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That is
now,
just mind-blowing.
I had early in my career, I was very fortunate to have a couple much older mentors. Who are quiet and unsung, who were in this field, you know, long before you or I were hatched, Bill, who gave me some really good advice. And one one advice, and people don't understand this, so you have to be careful how you say it. Told me, belief is the enemy. And what he meant by that is if you believe too strongly in any one theory, you can be misled. So certainly I have my beliefs. Certainly I have my opinions. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying I think in this area...
You can't shut the door to other ideas and other possibilities.
Because you and I have both seen, and we both know, people who have one hypothesis. And every little scrap of evidence has to fit that hypothesis. Or what did they do with it? Throw it out.
Yeah.
So, like you just said, my friend, we have to keep the door open because none of us know the whole picture. And any time someone tells me he has the answers, I know I don't want to take a long bus ride with that person. That's usually a sign for me to say you probably don't know as much as you think, my friend.
That's true. And I remember doing one show here where I began to open people's minds to some things that no one even wants to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the point that he who listens and believes what they're told all their life become prisoners of those beliefs.
Yeah.
And they are locked in chains just as the prisoner is locked in chains on death row.
That's true.
And in fact, if they don't get out of that situation, they will die just like that prisoner on death row.
And die without ever having lived.
That's correct. It's very strange. I don't know if you've discovered this or not, but I have learned in my life that you only begin to live when you begin to walk on the edge of the razor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a very profound near-death experience when I was 11, which demonstrated to me, and I said to me, listen, my experience doesn't have to prove anything to anyone else because it was my experience, that there is that within us that is eternal. There is that within us that lives on. And now I'm not in any hurry to replicate that experience, but having that kind of experience does remove your fear of death when you find out there really is no pain. When you reach the point where you are really dying, where you have really been beat up so much, which is what happened to me, that you are dying. There is no pain. Now, as I said, I'm not in a hurry to repeat the experience because I feel I've got a lot of things I want to do yet. But having that experience at the age of 11 really freed me from a lot of, I think, time. A lot of people spend their lives saying, do we survive death? Is there something beyond? Well, to me, I had that demonstrated when I was 11. I also had contact with something, some humanoid-type entity when I was 5. Now, I'm not dogmatic about what that entity was, but...
I thought you were going to tell me an abduction story.
I wouldn't make that claim. I don't know what happened. I only know that this entity, I grew up in the plains, as I think you know, the
uh-huh.
wide open spaces.
Sure.
There weren't other houses around, and one evening I heard footsteps in the October leaves. I heard, we didn't have running water at that time, I heard the wash tub from the pump being dragged over to the house. And
I remember. You told me this.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
Go ahead. The listeners will find it fascinating.
Well, I saw this smallish entity. What I first thought was a small man with a big hat until as I was staring at the entity, I guess we've all done that, where we've looked at the back of somebody's head, you know, until they turn around. I guess that's what happened because I sat on the edge of my bed just staring at this stranger, this intruder to our farm. And then slowly that entity turned to me. And, of course, it was, you know, again, the eyes were pretty reptilian. And I saw that that wasn't a big hat he had, but that was an elongated skull. And then I don't remember anything else.
Were you afraid?
I don't even remember fear. I remember being intrigued. I've always been a night person, so, of course, a little boy should have been in bed. I just had a little vacation with my mother's sister and the families and so forth. Because I'm still a night person, as you know. I go to bed at 4, 4:30. And my mother was saying, I was always that way, you know. They could never put me to bed and so forth. So I just always enjoyed the evening for my work and my thinking and so forth. So that's why I was up then, and that's why I saw the entity. Now, again, whatever that entity was, and I'm not dogmatic about it at all. Some people say it was a dream. Well, if it was a dream, it's the most profound dream, and it's probably the only one I remember at being 4 and a half. I don't remember any other dreams from that time, but this I have never forgotten. I mean, I can still see that. I can still see that entity, whatever it was. So I had these experiences before I was 11. So people go through their entire lives, you know, saying, what's our purpose in life? And are we alone in the universe? And is there life after death? Well, I feel really blessed, not special and not wonderful, but blessed that I had those big questions answered for me, Bill, before I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
So I could really focus on my work, you know. And basically my work is kind of telling people, or at least alerting people to those realities.
Well, you know, I can remember having some pretty vivid dreams when I was small. So the dreams were so vivid that they were real.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't separate reality from the dream. It wasn't anything like what you dreamed. I remember for a period of time I used to dream that I was falling. Later I learned that's supposed to be a sign of insecurity, that you don't feel comfortable where you're at or something. I don't know if that's really true or not, but I grew out of that after about 6 months. But I would wake up covered with sweat and just shaking and still feeling like I was falling, and then it would take me a minute to get my bearings in the room and realize that it was just a dream.
Well, what I learned to do early with my dreams, which is why I'm kind of convinced it isn't, if someone insists that, oh, that was a childhood dream, and then, you know, I'm not interested, as I said, in arguing with the person. You know?
I don't think it's a dream that you have, because so many people have this same experience.
Mm-hmm.
But they attribute it to something else, and they're absolutely positive they know what it is. And I don't think they know what it is any more than the man in the moon.
No. We have to stay open. But interestingly, and I have to share this with you, because it was just a few years ago. I'm 57 years old, so I had this experience before I was five. So, I mean, I was nearly five, but not quite. So, I mean, we're going back a few years. I walked in Sedona, Arizona, and of course you know where that is.
Yep.
And a friend of mine was having an art show. He does these spacey kind of paintings and so forth. And I walked in there, and there, son of a gun, was as close to the entity I saw when I was 5 years old as I've ever seen.
In one of his paintings?
One of his paintings. So I said, Luis, I said, my gosh, I said, did you do that for my description? Because I thought maybe he'd been in the audience or something, or at his home or some of a friend's home. He says, no, I was commissioned to do that by a lady. Well, as it never happens in real life, but always happens in the movies, but this time happened in real life, the lady came walking in. Now, here is a woman who now lived in California, Bill, but when we met and compared notes, I grew up in a little town, not in the town, but near a small Iowa town out in the country. This woman that we're meeting for the first time 50 years later, this woman grew up in the small Iowa town next to ours.
Wow. And she had
now, she had seen, and we compared notes. Now, I'm not saying it's the same entity, but she saw a similar entity. It would have been in the same night, the same time, and we don't get confirmation until, you know, almost 50 years later.
You know, the same thing happened with Willie Strieber's book, Communion. When, mm-hmm. when that book hit the shelves, many people who had no interest in UFOs or extraterrestrials whatsoever would walk by the book rack and just see the cover of that book and go into hysterics.
Yeah.
Because in some dream or in some experience that they had somewhere in their life, they had seen that same creature on the front of that book.
That's right.
There's a lot of people out there I know shaking their heads.
Fine.
As they I've told them over and over and over again, this is something significant. It's either some manipulation of the most probably grandest and most successful mind control operation in the history of the world, or it's a real phenomenon involving something that we don't understand at this point, or it's really extraterrestrials visiting this earth. But whatever it is significant, and it's affecting large numbers of people. But what's more important, it's affecting the subconscious of all of us, and it's leading us in a direction that we don't know yet whether we want to go down that road. And we need to stand back and evaluate this and find out if we really want to go down that road or not. What do you think about that?
That's the moment of truth, the moment of decision we all have to face. And I have opted for exploring the road, staying open, looking at all possibilities, trying not to be locked dogmatically to anyone, but as you, my friend, intrigued by the mystery because something is going on. Now, I'm kind of uncomfortable because every time I think, I picked up a book on the Illuminati at one time, and I saw my name in there in several places, not as an Illuminati, but of things that had happened to me that people had gleaned from my books, specific incidents. Also in that book, I read that one of the early founders or manipulators or whatever of this society was a Baron Bode, B-O-D-E.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to have been born in the only town Bode in the world.
Well, I hate to do this, Brad, but we're just about out of time. Can you give an address and a phone number where our listeners can reach you if they wish? Maybe
well,
find
I
out about
an
you.
Address, and I should mention if they would send a stamp self-addressed envelope,
okay.
Number 10, I would be happy to send a little catalog and where we're going to be and some of our overseas expeditions if they'd like. So if they would send that to 505 West M, that's M as in mother, 505 West M Street, Forest City, two words, Forest City, Iowa, 50436.
And folks, if you don't remember that or you didn't get to write it down, I will post it on the hotline for you. Brad, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. It was really nice to talk to you again.
Oh, good to talk to you always, Bill. Give my best to the family.
Fantastic. And tell Sherry we said hello also.
Will do. Take care now, friend.
Good night, folks. And God bless each and every single one of you.
The sound you hear is dripping blood. This is the start of Black Sunday.
You still there, Brad?
Yeah.
How'd you like it?
Oh, I think it really went fast.
Oh, yeah, it does. The hour goes real fast.
When you said that it was over.
Yeah, the hour goes really quick.
It does. Well, how'd you think it went?
Oh, I think it went fantastic. I think it was really nice. It was a kind of a laid-back, easy conversation, and we talked about things that people find absolutely fascinating, even if they don't know anything about it. And the ones who do know something about it are usually sitting on the edge of their chair waiting for some great revelation, which we never give them because we don't have it either.
I'm just been disappointed. Many people have come up to me for the word.
Oh, yeah, me too.
The revelation. I say, I'm sorry, I don't have it, you know. But if you ever find it, you know, please tell me.
Yeah, me too.
Well, it was really good to talk to you, and I hope it's not too long before we get together.
Well, I hope not, too. I'll be in...
You're not going to New York, I take it, then?
No, I don't know what...
The Whole Life Expo?
No, I don't ever go to the Whole Life Expo.
But you don't do those anymore?
No, they really upset me. They really made me angry.
Oh, really?
I went, and they didn't pay me for a year.
Oh, really?
And then the expo dissolved. And then they put it back together again. They called me, want to come speak. And I said, are you kidding me? You didn't pay me from a year ago. I'm not going to come and speak at your expo. You know, you said you were going to pay me if I went and spoke. I fulfilled